Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
This is Bewilderbeasts, an infotainment show dedicated to inspiring curiosity for all ages by investigating the ways animals intersect at humanity. I am not a historian, an ethologist, a researcher, a scientist, a zoologist, a trained audio engineer, or an expert in, well, anything. Y'all, I'm lucky if I can remember to put my clean laundry in the dryer before it gets funky. And while I make every effort to present things as accurately as I can with a fun flair, I'm going to mess up. And that's okay. I hope I've given you a nice place to jump off from on your own adventures into curiosity. Or at the very least, I've given you the key to win your next round of trivia. Hello and welcome to Bewilderbeasts. I'm your host, Melissa McKee McGrath, recording a really far distance from the American Southwest Desert. I am in a hurry, and so I didn't look it up. On today's episode, we are actually going to be discussing a very complicated relationship between donkeys, biologists, and the desert. All right, let's go. Hello, everyone. Real fast up here at the top. I have a presentation tonight that I'm preparing for, and I just have a little bit of time to record this episode, so I'm just going to go ahead and do that. Thank you for listening. Please, if you like this show, please support it and share it. There's only a few more episodes this season, and I guess that's it. I'm just going to jump right into the episode, and I hope you guys are having a good week. It's been rough out there, and as I told my Patreons, it's rough for a lot of people right now, and if you're one of those people and this brings you a little bit of light, I hope I can do that for you. All right, so now let's go to the desert. There's no doubt about it. Things are heating up. The planet is getting warmer. The World Meteorological Association says, quote, the past 8 years are on track to be the 8 warmest on record, fueled by ever-rising greenhouse gas concentrations and accumulated heat. Extreme heat waves, drought, and devastating flooding have affected millions and cost billions this year. End quote. That's bad. We see the images of polar bears swimming further and further, skinnier and skinnier to get food, and they can drown. Elephants are marching further only to find barren riverbeds. It's bad, y'all. It's bad. And if there was a way to dig for water in areas that there seemingly is none to be found, maybe that could help. But did you know that elephants do this? They have been known to dig deep, deep wells when no other water existed, which went on to help other animals in the area desperate in the desert for hydration. But African elephants are native to, well, Africa. We don't exactly have an Arizona elephant indigenous to the American Southwest. Or do we? We have something, though. An ace in the hole, as it were. That is, if the hole is being dug by a donkey named Ace. Donkeys and horses seem to serve a similar function here, but the question that biologists have is this okay? You see, as we discuss all the time on this show, the issues with invasive species, and donkeys and horses fall into this category in the American Southwest, like the pythons in the Everglades from last week, unquestionably bad. The lanternflies in Pennsylvania, definitely bad. Though their doom bloom honey, delicious. Check back to that episode if you have no idea what I'm talking about. But in this case, this may actually be the one where maybe an invasive species is a boon to the environment, or at least isn't outright terrible. So if donkeys and the desert had a Facebook relationship, it would be considered, it's complicated. So first, let's look at the history and why researchers have not exactly been looking at donkeys and horses in the kindest of light here in the United States when it comes to its effects on the environment. Donkeys were a North African special and came over with the 1800s brand of colonizers, the ones looking for work in the mines or to go get them some gold. And as custom, animals got out, or were let out, or released when no longer useful. And they were pretty dang useful in the mines. They were smaller and harder workers than their equine cousins, the horse. And it turns out the one thing that horses were good at is that they're very trainable. One can teach a horse to jump off a cliff or trick them with blinders so they don't see that they're jumping off a cliff and will run off it blindly. The making of the movie Jesse James in 1939 ended up leading to the tragic deaths of two horses when they were run off a 75-foot cliff just so filmmakers could film the stunt rider jumping off the horse midair to land in the water below. The famous flick Ben-Hur had over 100 reported horse deaths directly due to filming, because of the horse's trainability and willing to work. Western movies were often not kind to the horses who made the movies possible, but that footage from Jesse James changed Hollywood. The American Humane Association was involved to change things for the better, and it worked. For a little while. Until gritty realism was preferred in the 60s and 70s. After more uproar when word got out more animals were hurt or dying on movie sets, we finally got the regulations in place that allow us all to see the big text during the ending credits: no animals were harmed in the making of this film. It always seemed that the horses were getting the brunt of the injuries, the bad end of the stick, and that's mostly because people thought that donkeys and mules were stubborn. It's not that they're stubborn. It's that they just have more self-preservation in spades, and they won't do something unless it's really in their best interest. And it turns out jumping off a cliff? Not really in the donkey's best interest. I find it's easier to think of donkeys and mules more like the equine version of the stereotypical cat. I'll do it, if I wanna. But maybe there's something to the quote stubbornness, which is not a trait that I really subscribe to any animal, but I don't take that as a bad sign. When I hear an animal is stubborn, if a student, let's say, comes into my class and says, "Look, my dog is stubborn," I'm instantly looking for what will motivate that animal, and I love that challenge. There is always something. Again, some animals work more like a cat, and donkeys are those animals in the equestrian world. So in the 1800s, when the donkeys got out somehow, go west or already west or were let go to run west, they found refuge in a place not unlike where they originated from, Death Valley. The donkeys took to Death Valley like, well, a fish to water? In the 1930s, worried about the effects of the environment, and we've had many, including last week's story on the pythons, the government started advocating for the death of the Death Valley donkeys. "They're killing our crops, they're stomping our vegetation, they're driving away the bighorn sheep." Despite efforts of the government, the donkeys stood there with little donkey faces and saying, "Nah." The biggest bone of contention between the environmentalists and the neighing ne'er-do-wells are the giant holes that they dig. Holes that are 5 to 6 feet deep, just like the elephants. And here's where it's way more complicated, and there may not even be a good answer here to the donkey dilemma, which is in stark contrast to the other animals we've discussed on this show, like the pythons, no natural predators, cane toads, no natural predators, killer bees, no natural predators. Are you picking up what I'm putting down? Okay, well, the donkeys have become a part of the food chain here. They are digging these holes where animals like deer, mountain lions, scrub jay, javelinas, and other animals can drink water when no other water sources exist. They have completely shriveled up. In fact, these equine wells dug by feral horses and donkeys have attracted, at least by visible camera, 57 different species of animals drinking from these life-saving holes. Not only that, but plant people, yo, planthropology people, y'all are going to maybe get some complicating feelings too. Because one of the biggest complaints about the horses and donkeys in the desert was that they were trampling and destroying native plants, and they were at fault for the erosion of all these waterbeds. But the wells served as a germination station. Desert trees need lots of help. And with these dug wells, the seeds from the trees were given a little leg up, if you will. Cottonwoods and willows have benefited immensely from the other naysayers. In 2014, Erik Lundgren took what most other biologists saw as evidence of desert destruction, but in a different light. Instead of immediately brushing it off as another case of an invasive species ruining the party again, which, fair, he instead connected the dots between the donkeys digging like little kids do at the beach and the elephants of the savannah. And off Eric and his curious friends went to observe four drying up creek beds in Arizona. The findings were incredible. 64% more animals, plants, and life were found in these areas, the areas around the donkey wells, compared to other similar areas nearby without the Equa assist. In fact, Eric Lundgren doesn't want us to think of these animals as an invasive species anymore. Instead, he thinks of them more similarly to ecological engineers, like the beaver. By creating and providing access to water, these donkeys are saving animals and plants who would otherwise die due to a warming climate and human impact on the environment. These little hoofed heroes are saving species. And the reason this isn't a donkey disaster is, at least in my estimation, due to having a predator. All the other stories about invasive species on this show, where they were brought to a place, released to a place, and everything goes haywire at a place, is because in large part there are no natural predators in those places. But this new guy moves in, makes changes, kills everything, changes everything for all time. Looking at you, lionfish, looking at you, cocaine hippo, looking at all y'all. But that's not the case here with the horses and the donkeys. One of the animals at the watering hole is helping is the mountain lion. And they are helping keeping the burrows from going berserker on the landscape. Sort of. I said it's complicated. Eric Lundgren looks at the data. When there are no predators nearby the donkeys, they are trampling down the native vegetation, which is not great, and that's kind of the beef that these other biologists have. Sure. The donkeys are making paths through the available wetlands, which happens to be closer to the campsites in the park where people go. And that can help some plant species thrive, but it's not ideal for the whole of the environment, and this is where federal biologists and the government get upset. Perhaps rightfully. But in the areas where people aren't hanging out for extended periods of time, where there is less access to flowing water, the donkeys and horses are a bigger piece of the food web. Because if there are no people, apex predators can exist freely. First, these donkeys are digging the holes for other animals to survive, which is great, and they're not trampling down any existing vegetation there, and they feed their predator, the mountain lion. Donkeys seem to be the main food source for the mountain lions in Death Valley. There is a lot of information about, like, kill piles that mountain lions make, and I'm just gonna leave it there. You can find all of that data in the resources of today's episode. Suffice to say, what I read, these mountain lions are eating a whole lot of donkey and saving a whole lot of other species in the desert. And Eric Lundgren suggests that when there are fewer people and more mountain lions, the donkeys and horses are a net good for the environment. No one likes to talk about animals getting eaten, but with their numbers in check in these environments, they are helping the environment, unquestionably. And this may not actually be a case of invasive species gone rogue. This could be in part due to a weird part of the history of donkeys, horses, and yes, even elephants. In the United States, Eric Lundgren refers to, quote, ancient precedent. About 12,000 years ago, there is evidence of horses and elephants being here in North America prior to an unexplained extinction event that wiped everything out. And no matter how they got here, they are now taking up the mantle and fulfilling a role that donkeys and that these horses may have served a long time ago. The big cats, it seems, are preferring a donkey dinner instead of going after the bighorn sheep that live in the area, which is excellent news if you're a bighorn sheep. But according to the Death Valley website and some federal wildlife officials, they are unmoved by Dr. Lundgren's conclusions. They are still putting forth a zero-tolerance policy on non-native donkeys and horses in Death Valley, which, checks notes, means zero donkeys in Death Valley. The Death Valley page, dedicated to bighorn sheep FAQs, frequently asked questions, has a few paragraphs updated in 2019 about how the biggest threat to the bighorn sheep are disease, climate change, gene pool isolation, vehicles, and non-native burrows. I'm guessing the gene pool isolation is in part because they have to stand awkwardly on those cliff faces avoiding predators like, well, mountain lions. Which, by the way, was not listed as a threat to the bighorn sheep, despite them really liking to eat bighorn sheep. Non-native burrows are marked as Big Threat TM because it's widely thought that the burrows are eating all the food, drinking all the water, and eking out all the animals and plants that should be there. And aside from a big birth rate, because burrows like to make baby burrows, burritos if you will, federal wildlife officials don't think the number of mountain lions can keep up with the 100,000 feral donkeys and horses running rampant through the park. Hence the It's Complicated. There was a brilliant New York Times article written by Asher Albin in 2022 where I got a significant portion of today's information. Asher writes, "If the donkeys are now a permanent feature on the landscape, Dr. Lundgren argues it's worth seeing them as potential parts of a functional ecosystem, not alien to it anymore. A lot of the population numbers you hear and the stories of how horribly invasive these animals are, ignoring the fact that predators can hunt them, especially if we leave those predators alone." End quote. Personally, I feel like it's going to be very, very difficult to get any invasive species down to zero. We've read that script. It doesn't happen. It's been proven again and again and again and again and again and again and again, just even on this show. However, if they are helping sustain other plants and animal populations, and the donkeys are now a functional part of the food chain, especially while we humans are over here mucking everything up, I think it's fair to say that they should stay as long as things can stay in check. Again, we did this by bringing them here to begin with. This is again another environmental issue brought on by us, and this feels like a very different issue than the python problem last week. With no natural predators, the pythons killed over 98% of all mammalian life in the Everglades. In my lifetime. And they are moving now in search of food. The donkeys are doing some good, but it's a complicated question, one I am certainly not qualified to answer. But it is a good reminder that sometimes we just shouldn't jump to conclusions before having all the information. Because sometimes, in the case of the donkeys and the horses in Death Valley, they can do much more good than harm. And sometimes it takes a lot of unlearning to recognize that previously held notions of novelty and an environment might actually be wrong.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Just for the halibut.
Fry it in a basket or broiled in a pan. Eat it raw like you're in Siam. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
So thank you for joining me today on Bewilderbeasts. If you have questions, topic ideas, animals in history, other animals that dig wells, send it into bewilderbeastpod@gmail.com. And just stay curious. Like I said, it's rough out there. Just try to stay above water. Let the donkeys help you. I got today's information from public.wmo.int. Oh, the World Meteorological Organization, phys.org.news, smithsonianmag.com, wikipedia.org, newyorktimes.com, and salon.com. Intro and outro music is Tiptoe Out the Back by Dan Leibowitz. Interstitial music, as always, is MK2. All other music and sound effects are provided by Pixabay and freesound.org. Big thank you to my network, Podfix. And if you are curious, like I am, go ahead and check some of their shows out. And that's it for me for now. I gotta run. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. and make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.